Federal, state, and local law enforcement officers no longer have to check multiple and disparate databases to ensure they aren't stepping on each other's toes. The concept of event deconfliction is part of the federally led effort to improve information sharing across law enforcement entities around the country. Shmendra Paul is the program manager of the information sharing environment. In part one of our interview, he tells me more about this effort to bring together three main law enforcement databases.
These systems now that have been previously fragmented and stovepiped are interconnected. So now, today, if you deconflict in one of those systems, you're deconflicting in all of them. That's a big step forward within the framework of the information sharing environment.
And when you say they were previously stovepipes, so let's just take risk centers for a second as one of those systems. If you went into that one, that's all you got was that information. But if you went into, for instance, HIDA, which is a drug intensity enforcement back from the 80s, that you'd only get that information. So you wouldn't know if there was another investigation going on at the same time in one of these other areas. I know I'm simplifying a little bit.
That's right. There's three main systems that are out there today that were previously stovepiped from each other. RISC-SAFE, anchored with the RISC Regional Information Sharing Systems, that dates back to the 70s and 80s and is in operation today and is a key partner for the information sharing environment. RISC-SAFE is used mainly in the western United States and has got a pretty good footprint of users. There's SafetyNet, which is anchored with several of the high-intensity drug trafficking areas, or HIDAs. That's in the middle part of the country, the Midwest down to the Gulf Coast, you know, other areas where it's used. And then Case Explorer, which is also with the HIDAs, the high-intensity drug trafficking areas, a little bit more of a nexus on the East Coast and Northeast. With SafetyNet, there were multiple instances that were built and deployed that were previously not connected. So the big step forward here is the RISC folks, the Regional Information Sharing Center folks, the HIDAs, the high-intensity drug trafficking areas, which is about 20, 22, 24 of those across the country. And then the Fusion Center folks, the National Network of Fusion Centers, came together with federal partners, but it was mainly a state and local-driven activity to interconnect their systems. Now, that was at the technical level. They used ISE frameworks like the National Information Exchange Model, Project Interoperability, the Common Profile, some of the other tools in Project Interoperability to build what they called a Partner Data Interface, or PDI, that was the consistent interface that they interconnected in this distributed and decentralized way. But we also supported these folks with our partners at DEA to come together to harmonize policy. Not every one of the systems had a similar definition for what a conflict was. These are event conflicts. They're a conflict in space and time, so the time windows might be different, or the location box on a map might be slightly different. There's also security requirements here. You're talking about pretty sensitive information about upcoming law enforcement operations, and so making sure that folks were, you know, could bridge security policies around this type of information sharing. So it's a big step forward.
You mentioned DEA as one of the partners for the information sharing environment. Is this mainly at the federal level, or is this also going down to the state and local level? So the cop on the street, so to speak, can potentially have some access to these interconnected databases now?
This is, you know, most of the law enforcement in this country is at the state and local level. So this is primarily a state and local thing, but it does include federal agencies. There's federal law enforcement, and they participate. I would note that the Deputy Attorney General last year issued a policy around the operational elements within the Department of Justice deconflicting, trying to advance effective deconfliction. There was event deconfliction, but also case subject deconfliction. So this is a broad-based thing. Just to give you a sense of the numbers, across these different systems, it's about 3,500 law enforcement agencies. So when you subtract out the federal law enforcement agencies, you still got about 3,500 law enforcement agencies. Those law enforcement agencies include about 400,000 officers, sworn officers, which is a majority of the officers in this country, which is between 750,000 and 800,000 law enforcement officers. So there's a fairly large existing participation. And the beautiful thing about what happened here, because of the distributed and decentralized architecture under the ISE, the operational processes in individual agencies didn't change. Where they previously deconflicted within their stovepipe system, now when they deconflict, it's a national deconfliction. And, you know, in the acceptance testing, right, the testing between the centers, before it went fully live, and it's going fully live, you know, as we speak, they actually discovered some conflicts where law enforcement in Michigan was conducting some operations in California. And through this process, they were able to identify that and do the appropriate coordination to deconflict. Many times, these conflicts are not hard conflicts. It's more of a identifying, a, you know, the need to, you know, let folks know what's going on, you know, the courtesy of operating, you know, and pursuing investigations outside your area of responsibility or where you have overlapping jurisdictions.
Talk a little bit about how this came to be. You talked about the memo from the Deputy Attorney General last year. You talked about the need for it. I think the need is clear. I mean, if your example of Michigan and California, it may just be a courtesy, but it's an important courtesy. So toes don't get stepped on, investigations don't get potentially hampered or harmed by an overlap that they didn't know existed. How did this come to be? Was there a call from the law enforcement community? Was it something you guys saw within the information sharing environment that said, this is something we need to do? Give me a sense.
I mentioned these field-based intelligence and information sharing networks from the Fusion Centers coming up as an organic response from state and locals post 9/11, the war on terror, the HIDAs, the high-intensity drug trafficking areas, integral part of the what they used to call the war on drugs, right, coming up, funded out of the White House, Office of National Drug Control Policy. The risk centers, funded by the DOJ, coming up in the 70s and 80s as a response to the regional organized crime issues. It's been an outstanding issue that we need to better align these field-based intelligence and information sharing entities. I mentioned several state and local ones. There's also federal-type entities. The Joint Terrorism Task Force is out of the FBI, for example. The GAO issued a report a couple of years ago about this, but this is a known issue. This is something that we've been working on for some time. This particular success came out of an effort. There was a visionary leader. His name was Kurt Schmidt. He and some colleagues came to see me about 3.5 years ago and identified deconfliction and the need to better tie together the nation's deconfliction systems to get a further adoption of event deconfliction, to move forward in a national way on case subject deconfliction as a key and pressing priority. And he saw it as something that would really fit within the information sharing environment. Kurt at the time was the leader of the Chicago HIDA. Previously, earlier in his career, he was the HIDA coordinator in the Office of National Drug Control Policy in the White House. So based on Kurt's impetus, we would convene folks. That's a key power of our office. We bring folks together, put a spotlight on issues, encourage them to work them, you know, provide support through subject matter expertise. So we did that. Light touch. This really was a success rooted with our state and local partners, first and foremost, our federal partners also. Over time, they built momentum on tying these systems together. I would say about 9 months to 12 months ago, they got to a certain tipping point where the, you know, the key energy into, you know, into this started to accelerate the work. Key to this was, you know, integration of the technical approaches, the Deputy Attorney General's memo from last year, the Criminal Intelligence Coordinating Council, which is associated with the Department of Justice as an advisory committee, in you know, really pushing on this, and so the tremendous amount of progress, and it's really been accelerating. So that's how we came to this. It was our partners that brought this forward as a key issue and a key way to improve responsible information sharing.
Talk a little bit about how this got done. You mentioned the NEAM framework. You mentioned some other common platforms that you used. What needed to happen? Because there was, as you think you mentioned at the very beginning, not a lot of money put into here and not a lot of new systems being built to overlay this. So really it was a matter of making the data. This is really a data-centric approach in the way you described it earlier.
Exactly. This is a distributed, decentralized, you know, this is a model information sharing environment application. This was about taking the existing systems and exposing their business processes, their data, through a common interface, and then having a harmonized policy and governance overlay. So the different partner agencies use the National Information Exchange model, use the common profile, which we recently promulgated, some of the other tools and project interoperability to develop a business process interface exposing their data within that framework. Not a lot of new money here. There was a little bit of support. We paid for some travel. The reason this worked is because of the broad-based adoption of ISE frameworks and project interoperability the confidence folks have in the governance structures and the collaboration structures, the persistence over the years here. So this is kind of a serendipitous benefit of the efforts that we've been putting in around terrorism-related information sharing that is applying to more broadly now in the nexus of national security and public safety. It really is partner-based. I need to come back to that. We supported our partners that wanted to use ISC frameworks at the policy level, the business process level, the technical level, to improve their operations, right? And our partners saw the need to better align field-based intelligence and information sharing entities. You know, when they all recognized, looking at our public safety enterprise, there's opportunities for greater alignment, and on their own volition, under the framework of the ISC, they've pushed that forward. And so today, this deconfliction, it's 24/7 capability. There's watch centers, there's backup watch centers. The fusion centers in many jurisdictions provide the watch center capability for the deconfliction. They use WISN actually as the 24/7, the overnight for deconfliction. So if there's an event that's happening, somebody puts it in, it's time sensitive, it's happening in the middle of the night. That could be a jurisdiction in Georgia and it's being, you know, handled in the deconfliction by the risk center out in Sacramento. That's true collaboration nationwide in scope.